You're watching Silver News Daily. Subscribe for more.
Yeah, I'm afraid we're in for a rough 4 years, which maybe would have happened regardless. But I'm just telling you, the Trump administration's trade policies are sort of guaranteeing that it's going to happen, and also guaranteeing that he's going to catch the blame for it. That's not a good situation.
This is Kaiser Johnson with
The Hidden Game of Paper Silver is one of the most dangerous deceptions in the entire financial world. Unlike physical silver, where you hold the metal in your hands, paper silver exists only on screens and in ledgers, multiplied hundreds of times over for every real ounce in existence. Futures contracts, unallocated silver accounts, ETFs, they all promise ownership, but in reality, most of them are just smoke and mirrors. For every 1 ounce of real deliverable silver, there are estimates of over 200 ounces of paper claims floating around. This grotesque leverage has allowed bankers and institutions to artificially suppress the price of silver for years, masking the true scarcity of the metal and creating an illusion of abundant supply. But illusions don't last forever. And as economic pressures mount and confidence in these paper promises begins to crack, the entire structure is setting up for a spectacular collapse. The question now is not if the paper silver system will fail, it's how quickly it will all come undone once the first domino falls.
My particular article, it's an unusual piece, and I'm just quickly looking up to refresh my name of the author. Yeah, it's Philip Courtney. So, what this article goes through is the sort of more or less unknown history of what's called the International Trade Organization. This was, to be part of the Bretton Woods structure. So the Bretton Woods structure originally had a one world currency and international monetary fund for banking and finance, for financial clearing, a World Bank for banking, and then a gold exchange standard to anchor the monetary system, plus an international trade organization, the ITO. That was going to guarantee fair trade all over the world and serve as a kind of fiscal master of the planet. In those days, the Keynesians believed that the way to fine-tune an economy was to trade off between fiscal policy and monetary policy, and that if you do this really well with the experts in charge, then you can reduce inflation to as low as possible while simultaneously reducing unemployment and then also prioritizing economic growth. So this is the belief. That was 1944 when this thing was sort of fleshed out. And then 3 years later, there was a thing called the Havana Charter, which all governments in the world were going to sign on to the ITO and commit themselves to what they hoped to be a kind of increasingly low tariff regime with ever fewer barriers, but then also commit governments to certain kinds of Keynesian style policies. Well, you know, in the end, the ITO did not get through, and instead it was defeated. And instead, by 1948, we got the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, which was specifically named so it wouldn't sound like the ITO. No, it was like a general agreement. So there you have it. It's a general agreement. It's not like a system. It's just general. It's an agreement, so it's not imposed on anybody. And it's just going to pertain to tariffs and trade, not fiscal policy. So it was a much reduced form, and the U.S. Signed on to that. The ITO was resurrected with, as you can guess, with the World Trade Organization. That was many years later, 1995. We had a World Trade Organization come along that had a treaty that was thousands and thousands of pages long. As a kind of a fallout from NAFTA, which was similarly thousands, tens of thousands of pages long. But by the 90s, the free market people, the advocates of free trade, started rallying around these big agreements, the World Trade Organization, which is kind of dead now, along with NAFTA. And at that time, I opposed all these agreements on grounds that free trade does not consist of creating international bureaucracies. This is really a kind of a bad idea. There's all sorts of major
While silver stumbles under the weight of its paper manipulation, Bitcoin has just sprinted past it without even looking back. Crossing $94,000 and becoming the seventh largest asset on the planet, Bitcoin's surge isn't just another crypto headline, it's a psychological earthquake. For decades, precious metals like silver were seen as the ultimate safe haven, a rock-solid defense against inflation, market crashes, and economic uncertainty. But now, with Bitcoin dominating over 63% of the total crypto market and smashing four-year highs, investors are voting with their wallets. They're fleeing traditional stores of value and pouring into digital assets, chasing liquidity, transparency, and independence from centralized control. Silver, weighed down by its bloated paper market, simply can't keep up. Not yet. And this growing divergence between Bitcoin's rise and silver's stagnation is sending a dangerous signal. When faith shifts from physical stores of value to digital ones, the weakest link, paper silver, is the first to snap.
Your problems with these things. But that real free trade in the 18th, 19th century sense is just let spontaneous agreements develop between producers and consumers and all countries, you know, buying from whom you want, selling to whom you want, while maintaining national sovereignty. And that could include tariffs, maybe, maybe not, right? It depends on the nation and the conditions and their revenue priorities and their, there's a lot of factors that go into that. But real free trade preserves national sovereignty precisely so you can also preserve the right of citizens to control through plebiscite the regime under which they live. More globalism means less democracy, less citizen control. The preservation of national sovereignty mitigates against the construction of global institutions. What I find so fascinating about the history of this, the failure of the ITO back in the post-war period in the late 1940s, was that the people who inveighed against it the most were the free market people, the people who favored old-fashioned forms of free trade, because they said, you know, you don't need international bureaucracies to manage trade. That's very dangerous. You don't want to construct globalist systems that disenfranchise the citizens of each nation. You don't want to lock nations into policy positions, you know, as recommended by experts that are inconsistent with what people on the within each nation actually want. This is an unstable situation. If you get free trade by force, it's not going to be sustainable. That's what that generation said in the late 1940s. And I think that that's exactly what happened. Once the ITO was resurrected, it's the World Trade Organization. Now everybody's really mad at globalism, the global institutions, global bureaucracies, especially in the wake of the COVID fiasco, in which the global institutions did impose on everyone, all the way down to their schools, their churches, their homes, their businesses, and then ultimately forcing injection of an experimental potion designed to cure the pathogen, which it did not do. So I guess my argument of this piece is that there are no shortcuts to get into freedom, that if you impose what you call freedom from the top down and remove it from citizen control of government, you will eventually create a backlash that will reverse whatever gains came out of the previous period. And that's my argument, that that's the times in which we live right now.
The technical picture for silver is sending warning flares that even the most casual trader can't ignore. Just days ago, silver shattered a key bullish correctional trend line that had been quietly supporting prices for months. Once that floor gave way, the metal didn't just dip. It plunged straight through its 50-day moving average, a critical support level watched by traders around the world. The relative strength index, the RSI, is now flashing deep oversold conditions, but here's the brutal truth. Oversold doesn't always mean rebound. In a true market collapse, oversold can become even more oversold as panic selling feeds on itself. Right now, silver sits precariously just above $32.56, the next major support level, but the momentum is ugly. Unless bulls can fight back and reclaim $33.10 with real conviction, The market is wide open for a brutal correction that could mirror, or even surpass, the bloodbath of 2008. The technicals aren't whispering anymore. They're screaming.
The single most damaging thing was the school closures. I don't think there's any debate about that. If you want to make a hierarchy of policies that were most damaging, the school closures would rank to the top. Because that just massively diminished literacy and got all kinds of, a whole generation of school-age kids addicted to social media, which in turn drove all sorts of pathologies. It's not a coincidence that immediately following the COVID lockdowns, we saw the explosion of gender dysphoria everywhere. This is what happens when you lock people in a room and tell them to make TikTok their best friend. It makes you crazy. On one hand, I'm gratified. I feel like that's more and more conventional wisdom that those schools should not have been shut. There's some real regret about that. And over the weekend, the White House, under the Trump administration, replaced COVID.gov with a new link that has a pretty powerful repudiation of all the policies of the COVID period, including those which began under the first Trump administration, which I don't think people are pointing this out. And the press is so lazy. Like, everybody who's reported on this thinks that this link is all about blaming Fauci for a lab leak in Wuhan. Okay, well, that's how it starts, but it goes much further. It makes fun of social distancing. It debunks the idea that masks can stop the spread of a respiratory virus. It blasts all sorts of coercive policies, including mandates. It's limited in the sense it doesn't go into the details of how all this stuff came to be, but it's generally a really good link, and it's good stuff. The problem is that the existing protocols within public health and epidemiology are even more firmly now attached to paradigms that were almost marginal in 2019, namely the idea that you should lock down the entire society in the event of a new pathogen, a novel pathogen, as they say, and wait for an mRNA shot. Okay, so that is a kind of more mainstream within epidemiological circles than it's ever been before. That's one of the consequences of COVID, that it sort of entrenched this idea. And yeah, there's a lot of debate about this, but I don't think people understand just how pressing this is within the profession of public health. And nothing has happened to the sheer power of the pharmaceutical industry that was, really the driving engine of the lockdowns, the school closures. Everything came out of this sort of industrial lobbying, the censorship too. Everything came out of this industrial lobbying by the pharmaceutical companies. And they're just as powerful now as they've ever been.
A lot of investors are clinging to the idea that industrial demand will somehow save silver from a crash. But they're about to get a brutal wake-up call. Yes, silver is essential for solar panels, electric vehicles, and advanced electronics. Yes, industrial demand is climbing year after year. But in a panic-driven sell-off, fundamentals take a backseat to fear. When liquidity dries up and margin calls start hitting across the board, investors don't stop to calculate future demand curves. They hit the sell button, dumping everything to raise cash. That's exactly what happened in 2008, when silver's long-term bullish fundamentals couldn't stop a 60% collapse in price in just a few brutal months. Today, the setup is even more dangerous. The World Silver Survey might show that silver is undervalued, and that might be true over the long haul. But in the short term, rising interest rates, a strong dollar, and desperate traders scrambling for liquidity are a toxic combination that could drive silver down fast, regardless of how bright its future looks on paper.
Can't travel. You have to stay home. You can't have house parties. You can't go to church on Easter. 5 years ago, the Vatican shut down for all public services on Easter. So, and so it was a global response. Almost every government, but like two or three went along with all this stuff. So it was really shocking. And the very next announcement was, well, if you want to go back to normal, then you have to cover up your face. You have to put this face covering from China on your face. You know? And then people didn't like that. They said, okay, well, you don't like the masks. Not a problem. Just get the shot. And that was, you know, 9 months later, 10 months later. Suddenly we all were encouraged to shoot ourselves up with some medicine that we didn't really need. I mean, most working age people, healthy people didn't need the shot. Even if it had worked, it was completely unnecessary. So there were a lot of people that just didn't want to do it. And they said, well, look, if you don't get the shot, you have to keep wearing your mask. But if you do get the shot, you can take that face covering off. So a lot of people got the shot. And then it turned out you still have to wear your mask. And, you know, you still have to obey domestic, you know, capacity restrictions and so on. So this is our world. And I had great hopes once the first Trump administration left office that the Biden administration would dial it all back and say, okay, this was all dumb. They didn't. They went the opposite direction because they, at this point, were alarmed at how they were concerned that there wasn't going to be a huge amount of vaccine uptake. So they wanted to drive it to 70, 80, and then 90%. And the only way they could get there was by increasing the fear campaigns, censoring people ever more on social media, taking greater, tighter control of media outlets, throwing more money around to NGOs to propagandize the public, and finally mandating that everybody get the shots at the penalty of losing their jobs or getting kicked out of school.
To understand where silver is headed next, we have to remember what happened the last time fear gripped the global markets, 2008. Back then, in the heart of the financial crisis, silver wasn't the safe haven everyone expected it to be. Instead, it collapsed by more than 50% in a matter of weeks. Why? Because when panic takes over, even the strongest assets get liquidated to cover losses elsewhere. Hedge funds, institutional investors, even retail traders, they all dumped silver to raise cash, to meet margin calls, and to survive. It didn't matter that silver had real intrinsic value. It didn't matter that it was historically cheap. All that mattered was immediate survival. And today, the parallels are uncanny. Rising defaults, crumbling commercial real estate markets, ballooning debt levels, the entire financial system is groaning under pressure again. And just like in 2008, silver is caught in the crossfire. But here's the crucial difference. This time, the paper leverage is even higher, the systemic risks are even bigger, and the crash could be even more violent.
So this actually happened to us, and it went on an additional 2 years, finally getting sort of dialed back a little bit by 2023. But I don't know. I mean, I was just somewhere over the weekend, and they were fresh, newly painted, newly stuck signs to socially distance. So, you know, it's not gone. It's not gone. It's still with us and we're still traumatized. Another major thing that happened, and I'm waiting to get some data on this, is that there's been a vast degree of substance abuse that has increased since those days. That's not a shock, but something that people don't understand, there's a much greater use of pharmaceutical psych meds among adults and children. So there's a culture surrounding psych meds, which is that if you feel uncomfortable or you feel sad or you feel depressed or you feel unenergetic, you're not getting to sleep or you're sleeping too long, whatever's wrong with you, there's a pill that you can take. And there are hundreds of these things, none of which have been subjected to any kind of serious clinical trials or anything like that beyond, you know, a couple of weeks or whatever. And they're dispensed by experts who are getting paid to get people addicted to these things. So now you've got a vast number of adults and children living off psych meds that don't work to solve the underlying problems and then get cured by adding more psych meds. So this is probably the next major epidemic we're going to face, not just chronic disease about which RFK talks, but medical addiction to psych med pharmaceuticals. It's not considered substance abuse, right? Like if you're using meth or cocaine or liquor, that's abuse. But if you're taking 21 different psych meds, that's just compliance.
Just before we get going, we just launched the official Silver News Daily Telegram. To kick things off, we're running a 10-ounce silver giveaway. Yes, real physical silver, not a voucher, not digital credits, actual bullion. This Telegram will be our new home for real-time silver discussions, market insights, collection picks, and everything precious metals. It's where the community truly comes alive. Here's how to enter the 10-ounce silver giveaway. Be subscribed to Silver News Daily on YouTube. Turn on the notification bell. Comment 10-ounce giveaway on 3 separate videos. Be an active member of the Telegram group and say hi. Once we hit 500 active Telegram members, we'll pick one lucky winner to receive 10 ounces of silver shipped directly to you. So get in early, stay active. Behind the scenes, a far bigger trap has been laid, and it's one that even the institutions themselves don't fully understand. Big money still treats silver like an afterthought, a small piece of their diversified portfolios at best, and a speculative play at worst. They're massively underexposed to physical silver, relying instead on paper claims, derivatives, and synthetic products that give them exposure without the hassle of storage. But this laziness is a ticking time bomb. When the paper system buckles under the strain of real-world demand and real-world scarcity, the institutions won't be able to flip a switch and suddenly secure physical silver. There simply isn't enough to go around. Those who hold real metal will be in the driver's seat, while the funds and banks trapped in unbacked paper contracts will be scrambling, paying massive premiums if they can get supply at all. The smart money might be late to wake up, but when it does, the scramble for physical silver will be unlike anything we've ever seen. And the window to get ahead of that stampede is closing fast.
With what so-called black box warnings. I mean, I was watching, I don't watch a lot of TV, but it tells, and there's a very famous pharmaceutical design for whatever kind of tag they want to put on whatever kind of made up condition you have, whether it's schizophrenia or bipolar or borderline or, you know, whatever. And said, you know, take this thing. And then, of course, they list the side effects at the end, which are a fraction of the side effects, just what they can fit in. But one of them was death. Death? So you're selling me something that you admit could cause me to die. And that's what TV offers. It's just incredible. Maybe this was going on before the pandemic, but I don't know. So the problem is that the pandemic response broke people, shattered their worlds, led people to, you know, a great deal of anxiety, depression, substance abuse, and so on. And then what do? They turn to the same industry that pushed this response to solve all the psychological problems associated with it. I mean, it is so deeply tragic. And we're not anywhere near coming to terms with this. Like, everybody will tell you it's better to be sober than drunk, but nobody will tell you that it's better not to take any psych meds than take them. It's, no, you should definitely take your meds if you're sad or depressed or unfocused or sleepy or have insomnia or whatever. There's always a med for you, and there's a doctor who can give it to you, you know. I've been reading this book over the weekend. One of the reasons it's on my mind, but it's called Unshrunk by Laura Delano, just came out. And she was a psych med patient for the better part of 13 years. You know, highborn, access to all the top doctors, you know, endless funds in her family to pay for all the treatment she could ever get. And at some point, she's not getting better. And she finally realizes, well, maybe the problem is the drugs themselves. So it took her, you know, like whatever, 12 years to realize this. And when she started getting off the drugs, of course, your body doesn't like that because your body adapts to the new drugs. And so she went to the doctor and said, well, I tried to drop this one, but it kind of makes me feel awkward. And they said, oh, well, that's now you have discontinuation syndrome. That is a new condition you have, and you gave it to yourself by stopping your meds. So here's another med you can take to fix discontinuation syndrome. So you see how it goes? So here's where we are, you know, as a culture and society. And that doesn't even speak to all the, you know, the economic problems and the financial problems and the political problems, the cultural problems, but this, the psychological leftover from this period is devastating and truly, I think It's like underestimated. It's a tragedy. And the people we're relying on to fix this problem are the same people who created the last problem.
While demand gears up for an eventual surge, the supply side of silver is quietly collapsing, setting the stage for an even bigger explosion once the dust settles. Silver mining production has been declining year after year, with fewer new discoveries, rising costs, and harsher regulatory environments strangling the pipeline. The easy-to-mine silver is gone. What remains is deeper, harder to reach, and more expensive to extract. Meanwhile, industrial consumption is relentlessly growing, especially in green energy sectors like solar and electric vehicles. This is a 1-2 punch the market is woefully unprepared for. During the initial panic, prices might crash, but as the reality of supply destruction collides with resurgent demand, silver won't just bounce back, it will ignite. It's not just a price recovery that's coming, it's the setup for a violent revaluation, one where the scarcity of real physical silver becomes painfully obvious to everyone who thought a few keystrokes could conjure metal out of thin air. And when that realization spreads, the scramble won't be orderly. It'll be a frenzy.
And without even passing any legislation or laws, that was what was changed about it. We learned a lot about the way things work at this period. So, you know, you're in a town, you're in rural Texas, wherever, and you want to go to the bar and try to settle up to the bar. They said, no, you can't come in because of COVID. Well, who says? Well, I would let you, but our local public health people say absolutely not. They want us closed. Well, are they forcing you to close? Well, They're strongly suggesting it, and I don't know what the consequences would be if I don't go along. I might
lose your license. Yep.
Plus, I don't want to be outed by the local media. They're crawling all over me, calling me a super spreader and so on. I don't know. I'm just better off complying with it. So then you go to the local public health place and say, why are you recommending this? There's no evidence that bars are super spreader places and that people are going to die. Well, we don't know. We just do what the State Board of Health is telling us. And they told us that. Then you go to State Board of Health. It's like, well, why are you doing this? Well, yeah, CDC. CDC and has its recommendations. You know, that's the federal agency. And we've got to comply with what CDC says. Then you go to CDC. Why are you doing this? Well, it's all because of the World Health Organization. All we're doing is going along with what the World Health Organization says. And then you go to the World Health Organization that, well, we're just relying on what the experts say, and so on it goes. Now, we're like six layers deep into this nonsense. There's been no new laws passed.
Lurking beneath all the chaos is the biggest powder keg of them all, the massive short positioning in the paper silver markets. For years, the biggest banks and trading houses have leaned heavily on silver shorts, manipulating prices and suppressing any real breakout. But as liquidity dries up and as confidence in paper claims erodes, these shorts become a massive liability. Every price drop today brings us closer to a point where short sellers, once in full control, are forced to cover their positions just to survive. And when short covering begins, it won't be a slow unwind. It will be a violent, desperate rush. Prices could gap up in ways that leave traders frozen, with physical premiums exploding overnight. We're talking about the kind of squeeze that makes the GameStop saga look like a warm-up act. Silver isn't just a commodity anymore. It's becoming a battleground between collapsing paper promises and surging physical demand. And when the squeeze detonates, it won't just be traders watching. It'll be the whole world realizing just how broken the system truly is.
Good ending to the story. So, yeah. And meanwhile, there were no laws passed, no legislation, no real penalties. And yet the world, the entire globe gets shut down in a kind of a totalitarian brutalism that the likes of which we've never experienced. But we have nobody really to blame for it and nobody to take responsibility for it. That was a strange lesson. And it really did shatter people's confidence in and everything in academia and intellectuals and elites and media and government, in medicine, and in vaccines for sure, but much more besides. So in dealing with, you know, what do you do in wake of a fallout like that? And I think you do kind of what Trump is doing, which is just this taking a wrecking ball to everything, which I think is unwise. I mean, I think it's wise in some areas, but not wise in others. But there's a kind of a nihilism, a political nihilism that that has befallen this country and many others that just want to destroy everything. And like I said, that's sort of fun and delightful to tear up the pea patch, but then when you might want peace, you know, I mean, there's a danger here. And my concern as of this discussion right now, and my attitude changes on this day to day and sometimes from the morning to the night and back again. But I'm very concerned that Trump's, extremist trade agenda, based on very crude formulation of the dollar value of goods flowing from export countries to import countries and back again, in his view, should be identical. I don't know whoever made that rule, but that's what he believes. And that you can use tariffs, to re-equalize that. And he sent out a post this morning with something like 8 ways in which non-tariff barriers can evade tariff barriers, which is like a permission to charge unlimited amounts of tariffs on anyone, anywhere in the world, you know, forever. And, it's causing a tremendous amount of chaos in the financial markets. And we don't actually know what the fallout of this is going to be. DHL is stopping shipments to the U.S. I mean, in some sense, it feels like another form of lockdowns. And it's breaking my heart in a way for a number of reasons. One is he's addressing a real concern, which has to do with the loss of American manufacturing and the failure of international trade accounts to settle and to create a situation in which, you know, China will be forever the producer of everything for everyone in the world.
So how do you survive the coming chaos? And more importantly, how do you thrive? It all comes down to preparation. First, ditch the paper promises. If it's not physical, if you don't hold it, you don't own it. Focus on acquiring real silver, coins, bars, anything tangible, and make sure it's stored somewhere secure and accessible. Second, manage your patience like it's your most valuable asset. When the crash hits and the headlines scream about silver's collapse, most investors will panic and sell at the worst possible moment. Don't be one of them. Understand the cycle. First the flush, then the squeeze, then the breakout. Third, be strategic with your buying. Don't burn all your cash at once. Leave dry powder to add during deep dips because the volatility ahead is going to be brutal. And finally, stay grounded. When the narrative shifts and silver starts its meteoric rise, emotions will run wild. Greed will tempt you to chase. Fear will tempt you to sell too soon. But those who stay calm, stay rational, and stay invested in the real thing will come out on the other side with generational gains, while everyone else is still licking their wounds.
World, and that nobody else will make anything. Okay, so that's awkward. It's weird. It's not really consistent with what we think of the results of normal free trade have been in the past. So that's a genuine problem that's crying out to be solved. But I don't think these blunt instruments that Trump's doing have been as carefully thought through as they should have been. I mean, the guy who's the guru behind it is not a practitioner of international trade. He's never been in the financial markets. He doesn't understand bond markets. He doesn't understand international division of labor. He doesn't know anything about supply chains. He's an academic. He's an academic who hates China. And that's Peter Navarro, who I know account as a friend. But on this subject, it's not really your best go-to person, but he's got Trump's ear. And the real sad thing about this is, first of all, we don't know what kind of damage this is going to cause. And we don't know the consequences of this. So he's already promised to bail out the farmers. Who's he going to bail out next? I mean, there's a lot of people to bail out. And that's going to balloon the budget deficit. The other thing that makes me really sad about what's happening right now is that Trump has done so much good since taking office. The elimination of critical race theory, you know, the abolishment of DEI, the gutting of many of the worst features of the federal workforce, the abolition of USAID, and, you know, really targeting a lot of the things that Doge has done. A lot of what Doge has done has just been fantastic. And there's so much more. you know, he's enterprise oriented. He's eliminating a lot of regulations. He's going after the regulations on showerheads and dishwashers. And I totally love all this stuff. He's eliminated the censorship that was being pushed by federal agencies. There's so many brilliant things that have happened. I'm afraid that it's all being put at risk by this kind of wild tariff policy that is shocking the markets. Now, I don't think that's the entire reason for why the financials are so weak right now. Probably we needed a major dial back, you know, from the heights we've been on, which are mostly based on money printing and air. The problem is it has made it impossible for anybody to blame anything but Trump and his tariffs. I mean, that is 100% taking all the blame for everything that's happening in the financial markets right now, which means Trump, which means the Republicans, which means it's putting at risk everything else that Trump is doing that's good, and preparing for a possible backlash that will be truly terrible.
The silver market's great deception is unraveling faster than anyone ever thought possible. The paper games, the false promises, the endless leverage, it's all racing toward a brutal, unavoidable wake-up call. Yes, silver will crash harder than most people are prepared for. And yes, it will leave a trail of devastation across investors clinging to empty contracts. But for those who understand the bigger picture, for those who stay sharp, stay patient, and stay focused on physical silver, the coming crash isn't a death sentence. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. When the dust settles, the world will finally see silver for what it truly is, not just a relic of the past, but a cornerstone of the future. Get ready, prepare smart, and ride the coming storm to your advantage. Subscribe to the channel to stay ahead of the chaos. And remember, this is not financial advice. Always speak to a professional before making any financial decisions.
Well, I guess I'm pretty sure that a major step that almost everybody needs to take right now, and we could all do better, is to revisit the virtue of frugality. Cutting back.
Yeah. Here's the recent article you just penned on that, America and the Spirit of Frugality.
Yeah,
folks, people, if you don't want to miss out on any of Jeffrey's latest writing, you'll find a lot of it in Epoch Times as well as on his Brownstone Institute, which we'll put a link to in the description. Go ahead, Jeffrey.
Yeah, we don't know what frugality is anymore. I mean, we've completely lost a sense of that. Not buying things you don't need. Learning how to cook at home. Learning how to curb your wealth spending. Pay off your debts. Repurposing clothes. I mean, buying from eBay rather than retail, and so on. I mean, this is the kinds of things that the virtue of frugality has got to make a return in people's lives. There's no way anybody can keep up the current spending under these conditions. It should have already happened, but unfortunately, there's a funny way in which the lockdown period actually spread a kind of materialist decadence among the laptop class. So they got them used to just doing nothing and making a lot of money for it. And, you know, that is not sustainable. And yeah, I'm afraid we're in for a rough 4 years, which maybe it would have happened regardless. But I'm just telling you that Trump administration's trade policies are sort of guaranteeing that it's going to happen. And also guaranteeing that he's going to catch the blame for it.
They've been lying to you for decades. The entire silver market you think you know. The charts, the prices, the so-called supply and demand. It's all built on a mountain of paper promises that can never and will never be fulfilled. The great silver lie is finally cracking. And what's about to happen next will blindside everyone clinging to the illusion that their ETFs and futures contracts actually mean anything. Right now, the cracks are already widening. Bitcoin has overtaken silver in global rankings, the paper markets are bleeding through key technical levels, and the so-called safe haven of precious metals is about to betray millions of investors who thought they were protected. But here's the kicker. When this brutal collapse hits, when paper silver craters harder than it did in 2008, the real story won't be about the losses. It'll be about the once-in-a-lifetime setup it creates for those who are prepared.